And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Born during the despair of the Great Depression, tempered by the fires of the Second World War, on a parallel Earth very much like our own, yet slightly different, they're banded together the greatest forces for freedom ever assembled. Over the many ensuing years, new and younger members would join the veteran champions of the Golden Age, continuing their fight for truth, justice, and the American way. Becoming so much more than just heroes, they became legends. Back to the Bins proudly presents Legends of the Justice Society of America.
Go away from my window. Leave at your own chosen speed. I'm not the one you want, babe. I'm not the one you need.
Welcome to another fast-paced, exciting episode of Legends of the Justice Society of America. I am David A. Pascarella, and my trusty partners in crime on this one, the producer, Mr. Paul Spataro.
I'm Paul Spataro of Earth A.
Is that Earth Asshole? I mean,
And jumping right in on point is the founder, Mr. Scott H. Gardner.
Hello. And I would
he's like Ray Kroc. He's the founder.
Just because Paul's already on my last goddamn nerve as we start this show, I just want to point out once again that while he's the producer, he's not the producer of these Legends episodes. I'm actually doing the editing on these. So put that
in your editor. I am still the producer. You are the editor.
All right. Okay. That works. Well, you know, we've been looking for an adjective for me for the longest time for this show. Maybe editor is the... Well, no, that doesn't really work because I don't edit all the shows. So I don't know. Actually, I'm afraid to get an adjective. But God only knows what it'll be.
The founder works well.
Founder?
Technically, you're a co-founder of this show and you're a co-founder of the network. But the other guys aren't around on this show, so you could just be the founder.
You know, you'd never know that fact if you went to our website, but that's a whole different discussion for another time.
So. Oh, we're only talking about this show. I the production values aren't always as high as I would like, but I'm still proud of what we put out on this show.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've been trying with
this. And if you're not, I could fire your ass. I don't care.
No, I've been trying with this one. I've tried to score the episodes, although I think I did put out one that I didn't score. I can't remember now. I don't recall, but I've been trying to score them and doing mild editing, kind of like the old days, trying to take out a lot of the ums and the ahs and the weird pauses and that sort of thing and just tighten them up and doing it kind of old school, but... Yeah, I'm having a blast with these. I need to get a little bit quicker with the process like I used to be able to. I still can't believe when I think about it. I'm sorry, I'm tangenting a little bit as we start this, but I was actually thinking about this on my way into work today that, you know, I cannot believe that Honeywell and I did a weekly show. I mean, it essentially worked out to a weekly show because we had four monthly shows going on. So that pretty much works out to a weekly show. With Two True Freaks proper for as many years as we did. I just look back on it now. I don't know how the hell we did it because I sure couldn't do it now. There's no way I could.
I don't
do
know
it.
If you know this, but this is a weekly show.
Right. But what I'm saying is, I mean, I don't necessarily, I'm not a part of everyone, unfortunately. I wish I was. But also, it's not just like you and I. You know what I mean? It's, you know, there's a team of us. Although, come to think of it, I mean, you do all the episodes except for the couple that I don't do. So, yeah, I guess in a lot of ways it is the same thing. I didn't really think of it that way, but I guess.
The one difference I think, which I think is significant, honestly, and it's one of the areas where I do tip my hat to you guys,
is you generally recorded very close in time to when you released, which meant you didn't really have a backup library of stuff to do. So it was almost like if you didn't get together and record, you weren't going to have an episode, and you pretty much always had an episode. With this, we could do 3 episodes in 1 week and then go 3 weeks without recording, because I have the 3 to publish. So I think this is a little easier just because of that flexibility. Plus the fact that if you aren't available and I call Chris Tyler or Professor Allen or somebody like that, you know, we could still pump out a show.
And as we're recording this, George H.W. Bush is president of the United States.
Richard Nixon just resigned.
He just resigned. It's real to real.
I feel like, you know, he and I got into a groove after a time to where we had a little bit of a time lead, but it was never much. And not anything like what we're doing with this, where you know, like way ahead, you've got shows stockpiled and, you know, in the can. And you're right. There were a lot, and I mean a lot, of late night, last minute recordings on like a Friday night in the stupid AM with a show due Saturday morning type of thing, you know, or Monday morning or whatever the case may be. Yeah, there was a lot of that shit in the old Choo Choo Freaks days, which is a lot of the reason I think why we haven't ever picked the show back up as much as we'd both like to. We're just it couldn't happen the same way it was back then. It was just a magical time that, unfortunately, I don't think we'd ever be able to get back again. But
I remember there was a span of months when I was kind of an unofficial regular on Comics Monthly Monday. And, you know, Chris would just throw out the call like the morning of. You guys available for tonight? Let's record. Here's the Freaky Five to have ready. I was like, okay, you know, 8 hours from now, I got to be raring to go.
Yep.
But it was fun. I enjoyed doing it. And, you know, when we stopped recording that show, or when I stopped being part of the show, you know, it was kind of disappointing because I enjoyed it.
I miss it. I do miss it a lot. I continue to be amazed that it ever happened the way it happened, because it could never happen that way again. But yeah, I also think there's a certain energy to that, too, you know, that helps with the recordings. I think they're a lot more, I don't know, something. There's a certain energy to that whole thing. But
there's also the fact, just my last thought on the subject is, and I've mentioned this to you in the past, you know, when you edit, you know, you are similar to, say, Terry Austin or somebody, you know, Bob Layton, trying to ink over something and improve it at every step of the way. Whereas I'm Vinny Coletta, and I'm going to erase you from the show if it's going to make it go faster.
Well, there's something to be said for that approach, too, sometimes, I think. All right, so we're going to dive back into this. So, this is our Legends of the Justice Society of America episode. And this time around, we're up to the next of our yearly crossovers. And I was noticing something we need to keep in mind to find where this actually becomes a tradition. Because it's starting to become a tradition, but they haven't yet referenced like the yearly team up. You know, it's not something they're planning to do. It's just kind of happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested when that actually starts to become an official thing. Anyway,
you mean when when in the book itself they acknowledge, oh, it's our yearly get together with Other Earth?
Yeah, because this is a weird one. But we'll just go ahead and we'll dive into it. Well, it'll all make sense as we go along. We are actually covering 2 issues this time, so we're going to cover the complete story on this one. We're looking at Justice League of America numbers 37 and 38. I have the synopsis for the first one. So Justice League of America number 37 is cover dated August of 1965. Was on sale on the stands, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, on June 10th, 1965, for a sale price of a mere 12 pennies. The cover on this one is penciled by Mike Sikowski with inks by Murphy Anderson. And it's an interesting one. It depicts the Thunderbolt, who is essentially a genie. He's depicted very creepy and weird looking on this, and he's kind of just zapping out of the ether, I guess, and he's being attacked by members of the Justice Society of America. And it says, the cover copy is interesting on this. It just says, what? Not a single member of the mighty Justice League on this cover? It says, why are the superheroes of the legendary Justice Society battling the menace of a living lightning bolt on the Earth without a Justice League? So it's a super spectacular that is sure to become a classic. I don't know about that. We'll see. All right, so Earth Without a Justice League is the name of our story. It was written by Gardner Fox, penciled by Mike Sikowski, inks in the interiors by Bernard Sachs. Roll call for this issue. This is an interesting one. For the JLA, the Justice League of America, essentially Flash and Batman, but only super briefly, because effectively the Justice League of America are not in this story. For the Justice Society of America, we have the Flash, Green Lantern, the Atom, Dr. Fate, Hawkman, and reintroducing Mr. Terrific. More on that later. Special ed appearance by Johnny Thunder and his Thunderbolts. So, for the synopsis on this, first I'm just going to kind of read the introductory page to get the mood going on this one. So, on the introductory page of the story, again, it's the Thunderbolt being attacked by the members of the Justice Society. It says, where is the Justice League, you wonder? What are the superheroes of the Justice Society doing on Earth One? Why are they fighting the Badnesian, I guess that's how you pronounce it, Badnesian Hex Thunderbolt of their fellow member, Johnny Thunder? For the answers to these questions, startling and stunning as they are, read on and brace yourself for the amazing and astounding situation that has developed on the Earth Without a Justice League. It gives the roll call, which I've already given, and an editor's note: since Earth One has been deprived of its Justice League, this issue's roll call consists of members from the Justice Society of Earth Two. All right, so our story doesn't even really get started before the WTF start to fly. Somebody, and I'd really like to know who, has sent Resident Earth 2 dumbass Johnny Thunder an invite to the latest meeting of the revived Justice Society of America. I may well have some spit on the cover of this issue from screaming, for God's sakes, why, at it when I was reading it. Why in the hell would anybody invite this moron when they are doing just fine and dandy without him all this time? Anyway, Johnny summons his Thunderbolt, whom he's apparently had a bit of a falling out with recently, and the Thunderbolt informs him that he's caught him just in the nick of time, as he's thinking of splitting for Earth One in hopes that that world's Johnny Thunder might not be such a dick. This gets Johnny thinking about Earth One and wondering what his counterpart over there might look like, and, because he's an idiot, wishing he could come face to face with him. Johnny's wish is, of course, the Thunderbolt's command, and next thing you know, the pair are dropping in on the Johnny Thunder of Earth One. Equally fashion challenged, but possessing a devious disposition as opposed to Earth Two Johnny's moronic one, this Johnny Thunder seizes the initiative, knocks the bejesus out of good Johnny, and takes control of the Thunderbolt, ordering him to hop down to the Universal Technical Company and swipe their payroll. The Thunderbolt complies and runs afoul of the Flash, who just happens to have already been there in his civilian guise of Barry Allen. Holy coincidence! Delayed by a row with the Speedster, the T-Bolt keeps the evil Johnny Thunder waiting a little too long, and he impatiently orders the Thunderbolt to return, where the magical being reports on his run-in with the superhero. Realizing he can't just do whatever he wants without attracting the unwanted attention of the Justice League, evil Johnny Thunder orders the genie to go back in time and prevent the Leaguers from ever becoming superheroes. The T-Bolt travels back and prevents that famed lightning bolt from striking Barry Allen's chemical rack, thus stopping the creation of the Flash. He stabilizes the core of the planet Krypton, or Krypton, thus preventing baby Kal-El from ever being sent to Earth to grow up and become the mighty Superman. He ensures Abin Sur will never crash on Earth and bequeath his power ring to test pilot Hal Jordan, stopping him from ever becoming a Green Lantern. He likewise prevents the origin of the Ray Palmer Atom, John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, from coming to Earth and kicking the living shit out of Batman on his very first adventure, sending him scurrying back to the stately Wayne Manor and a less hazardous life of a millionaire playboy. He also takes care of Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Green Arrow, and Hawkman, too. Mission accomplished, he reports back to evil Johnny Thunder, who renames the planet Earth-A. A for alternate, since the prevention of the formation of the Justice League has presumably altered its history. Chapter 2 begins with the Justice Society of America sitting around wondering where in the hell is Johnny Thunder. I think this scene would read much better if the pissed off looking Flash's dialogue bubble read, "The fuck were you thinking inviting him anyway?" instead of just suggesting starting a search for him, but I digress. Dr. Fate uses his magical bullshit spell to track the ionized air left behind in the T-Bolt's wake to track Johnny Thunder all the way to Earth 1. Okay. The group peers through Fate's crystal ball and sees the unconscious Johnny and learn of the plight of the T-Bolt held under the command of the evil Johnny Thunder. They also hear of the retconning away of their Justice League pals. It is decided that the JSA will head to Earth 1 to look for their friends, stop the evil Johnny Thunder, and maybe save their Johnny Thunder if they get around to it, but it's okay if he dies in the meanwhile. And so the narration box tells us, as they have done in the past, the superheroes of Earth 2 vibrate into the time-space continuum of Earth 1. Except, yeah, they've totally never done this all together as a team before. They were summoned to Earth 1 by the League in JLA number 22. And did they even go to Earth 1 in JLA 29 and 30? Anyway, the JSA travels to Earth 1 and crash in on Johnny Thunder's hideout right in the midst of the T-Bolt, giving it a cop-proof makeover. The JSA make quick work of Johnny Thunder's human gang of flunkies, and after a brief tussle between the genie and the heroes, evil Johnny orders his magical slave to whisk them away to safety, leaving his gang members behind. The JSA interrogates the men, only to discover, according to them, that the heroes of the Justice League don't exist and have never existed on this Earth. The Flash, Green Lantern, and the Atom seek out their Earth 1 counterparts to confirm this, and indeed find Barry Allen, Hal Jordan, and Ray Palmer living the civilian superheroless lives they'd have always had if they'd never been given their gifts. Dr. Fate tries to revive good Johnny, but is unable to due to the nature of the genie's magical whammy. I thought evil Johnny just punched him out. Now he's in a magical coma? Meeting back up in the now barren cave that would have been the headquarters of the Justice League of America had they formed, the JSA compare notes and decide that the only logical course of action left to them is to dress up as the Justice League in hopes that seeing them alive again will make evil Johnny blurt out what happened to them. Sounds legit. And so, the Atom becomes the other Atom, Green Lantern becomes the newer Green Lantern, Flash masquerades as the younger Flash, Mr. Terrific becomes the Batman, Hawkman goes green to become the Martian Manhunter, and Dr. Fate stands in for the Man of Steel. And soon, in the midst of robbing a cruise ship at sea, the bad Johnny Thunder and his thrall are confronted by the JLA? Johnny Thunder orders the T-Bolt to split into six parts to battle the heroes, which he does, but this just leaves each facet of himself at 1/6 strength, and each are easily bested by the heroes, although the fight scenes are pretty cool. Johnny once again orders a retreat, and as they zoom away, Johnny learns that the supposed JLA are actually the JSA in disguise, not the actual JLA returned, but this gives him an idea. What if the T-Bolt went back in time again, only this time substituting Johnny's minions for the heroes at the moment when they gained their powers? And thus it is that Race Morrison, not Barry Allen, gained the powers of the Flash, Barney Judson becomes the size-shrinking Atom, and that should have been about it. How in the hell Eddie Orson becomes the Martian Manhunter, Ripper Jones subs for Superman, Bill Gore turns into the Batman, or Monk Loomis is bequeathed the Green Lantern's ring is anybody's guess. I have literally hurt my friggin' head trying to no-prize this one, and I give up. This story broke me. Anyway, now Evil Johnny has his own Justice League of Evil, or whatever, and as the JSA, still disguised as the JLA, come crashing in, he tells them that the jig is up. He knows who they are, he knows what happened to the real JLA, and now, with the Thunderbolts' assistance, his boys are gonna kick your asses. Let the battle begin.
Phew.
Take a drink and calm down.
Shit.
Are you all right from that? I'm amazed you made it through that whole ordeal.
Wow. Yeah, my blood pressure's sky high. This probably makes it, my synopsis, I'm realizing, probably makes it sound like I hated this. I actually didn't. I actually kind of dug this. I'm pretty sure this was my very first time reading this. If it wasn't, I totally don't remember ever reading it before. I'm curious here. Oh, I do have it. Okay. So I'm curious, first of all, like I like to ask with these things, have you guys read this before and do you own this issue?
The answer to both for me is no and no. And walking into this meeting today, I anticipated you and I probably banging heads on this one. And yet, as you described it, and then as you said afterwards what you thought of it, I think we're in total agreement.
Oh, okay. So you liked it more than you thought you were going to, kind of thing?
I liked it more than I should have liked it.
Yes. Yeah, okay. That's a good way to put it. I totally agree with you, yes.
And I thought you're going to tell me how much you hate this, and I'm going to have to try and defend it. And the problem with it is it's probably not defensible. It's either you get a kick out of it or you don't. I had to try and look at this through 1960s glasses. Look right. From the perspective of the way stories were at that time and try and say, you know, would I enjoy this? And the more I did, the more I managed to enjoy it.
Right.
And I got a kick out of it.
I read this before when I did the trades. I did the read through. I don't own it. And I'm right there with you. I love this story. It's the most ridiculous story. And I have to be honest, I think it's one of my favorite of these so-called crossovers.
Who would have guessed?
Yeah. The same thing with the superpowers is the thing that, you know, punches me in the face, too. We dropped this guy on Krypton. Shouldn't he be pulped by the extra high gravity? Oops, that didn't work out now, did it?
We have a spaceship full of plasma.
Right, yeah.
I also have to say, I hate, not dislike, hate the cover to this issue. I think it's awful. It looks like a child drew it.
Yeah. It looks like color forms slapped down.
Yeah.
It's got no dynamism whatsoever. It's just all these figures thrown on there. The lack of color in the background, the lack of any type of just real structure to how this battle is going on. There's no way that this would have been the issue I would pick off the stands had I been buying comics in 1965.
Yeah, I can't really defend it. I do own this. I got it according to my notes here. I acquired it, almost a year ago, August 20th of 2022. We're recording this on what? The 15th of August. So, yeah, I paid $13.83 for it. I think that's pretty fair, I guess.
It's a fair price, but I got to say, a lot of times when I buy an old book, I want to forget as soon as humanly possible how much I spent on it. So the fact that you keep track of it is just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, there was something I was trying to figure out the other day, and apparently it was before I got the app or something I couldn't find. I think it might be the next issue. Yeah, that's what it was. So the next issue, 38. My copy is really whipped, and I hope I didn't pay much for it, but I have no note for that one, so I don't know how I acquired it. I don't know how long ago it was and why it's not in there, but it's not in there. But yeah, I do want to get a new, a nicer copy of that one, because the one I've got is pretty damn rough. But anyway, I'm not crazy about the cover either, but I did think, and I'm very curious what you guys think about this, I did think that the R overall, though, does take a big step up in this issue. Now, don't get me wrong, yeah, it's still not great or even all that good.
For the time. I think for the time it's good.
I'm gonna dissent on that. I'm not crazy about the art at all. I think a lot of it looks very, very stiff.
But do you think it's better than what we saw?
Some of it looks to me like it could be in an Archie comic. There's moments where it's better, but on a whole, no, I don't think so. I mean, start right off on the splash. Look at the way the Atom is throwing a punch. Look at Hawkman, how he's swinging his mace. There's like nothing behind either of them. They just don't look really like it. There's no kinetic feel from them at all. And just because the name came up today in a conversation, is it Hawkman or the Hawk Tour Man?
Johnny Thunder was last seen in Flash number 137, which we did cover on the show. The Thunderbolt, however, was not in that appearance, so this is his first Silver Age showing. He was last seen in Flash Comics number 91 in January 1948, prior to this one. So he'd been out of operation for quite a long time.
And having read a whole bunch of those original Johnny Thunder stories, if I never saw him again, it would be too soon.
See, that was one of my big takeaways from this. Now, granted, this makes it sound like I hated this. What I didn't, I actually liked it a lot more than I expected to, because as soon as you look at the cover of this one, I mean, I don't know if anybody remembers this from my Tales days, but I cannot stand Johnny Thunder. He's like Jimmy Olsen to me. He's just one of those characters I just don't see the point, you know? But I really can't stand
Snapper Carr or Rick.
I'll tell you right up. I liked Evil Johnny better than Johnny Thunder.
Right, yeah. At least he had a personality.
Right. You know? He had something. Johnny Thunder's
just I mentioned earlier that the art looks like it could be an Archie comic to me. Johnny Thunder could easily be a character in the Archie universe.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have the reality. Not that this stuff is based in reality, but you don't feel like he's got anything to him.
The opening pages with him remind me of something like you would see in like Jerry Lewis or Dobie Gillis or something like, you know what I mean? One of those like comedy comics type of thing, you know?
What do you think? Is that the draw of Johnny Thunder, that he's like, you know, the befuddled fool character that you're just supposed to get a laugh out of?
I think it's supposed to be wish fulfillment. He's the befuddled buffoon, and yet he has, in his own way, the ability to be the most powerful one in the society because he's got the command of the genie.
Right, but he's a dope.
Yeah.
I get, you know, where Gardner Fox, you know, because so far he's the only one we've really been dealing with on this revival, but of course other people will start to come into this. I get that he was enamored of the Justice Society, and these were characters, you know, from back then that he admired, and he wanted to bring them to the modern art. I get all of that, but I think it would have been better to be a little bit discerning. Not everybody deserves to come forward from the Golden Age, and I think Johnny Thunder and his Thunderbolt are a prime example of that. I've never liked either one of these characters. And I don't know that they work in a quote unquote modern setting. You know what I mean? I think they're a little too silly Golden Age, and I think they were best left back there.
So as presented in this two-part story, what is the impetus to bring Mr. Terrific back?
Well, Mr. Terrific is another one that aggravates me. So this is his first Silver Age appearance. And just like they did with Starman, the guy returns. Now, in this case, he'd been out of operation for over 18 years. He had last appeared in Sensation Comics number 63, March 1947. Out of operation for over 18 years, returns here, absolutely no fanfare, background, or really a proper introduction. There's a quick mention of I'm the man of a thousand whatever gimmicks or whatever he says. And that's pretty much it. Well, what the hell does that even mean? What does the man of a thousand gimmicks even mean? Does that mean he has a thousand gadgets on his utility belt? You know, he speaks a thousand. And what does that mean? And they don't really give him anything. So, I mean, I've come to like this character, but can you imagine being a kid back in 65 picking this up and this is your introduction to this character? You're not given anything to really understand, okay, what's his shtick? What's his deal? What does he have, superpowers? You know, there's just nothing. And I was even kind of surprised to see him here because I had always been under the impression that the story in the, I think it's in the 70s, where he gets killed off and then it was the mystery of like who killed him. That I thought he returned just to die in that story. I didn't realize he'd been reintroduced, you know, this far back, because I don't remember him in any of the other team ups. Is he?
I have no recollection of him any time between now and then.
Yeah. See, I don't remember.
Including the Justice Society books, you know, in All-Star Comics and stuff that came out before that particular crossover in JLA.
I'm going to have to look that. I'm very curious, you know, if there are and I'm just not aware of them. I'm going to have to look that up. So page one, like I said in my synopsis, I mean, this book just starts right out of the gate with like the what? So I'm wondering, is the Thunderbolt just talking out his ass, or is he serious here? He says to Johnny Thunder, he says, "Boy, you caught me just in the nick of time. I was about to shake the dust off this world. I'm getting rusty, not doing anything." And Johnny asks him, "Well, where were you going to go?" And he says, "To Earth One." Now, could he have really done this? Because I thought if he's Johnny's genie, you know, essentially Johnny's slave, could he just go, you know, screw you, I'm done, and just leave? I mean, was that really a thing?
I don't think so.
Unless Johnny gave him a wish, and his wish that he was free. I saw a lot.
Well, Johnny is clearly not that bright. He could probably be manipulated into doing that.
Right. But I'm thinking if the genie really could at some point just go, you know what, I'm tired of this guy, why has he waited all this time to do this? Because I never really got the feeling that the Thunderbolt was terribly crazy about Johnny to begin with, or terribly loyal to. Am I wrong in that?
No, I don't think.
Dave, you've been reading those stories.
I got the, well, as of what I was up to before I packed it in, Johnny still didn't know how to activate him. Like, he thought it was just good luck. And I got to the point, maybe 2 years in, I said, I can't read this shit anymore.
kudos for even trying, because I couldn't even.
But I gathered that Thunderbolt doesn't like him. I think he's just, you know, like, you know, talking out of his mouth, you know, like a snide remark.
That's kind of how I took it, because I it seems to me if he really did have the ability to just be like, well, I'm out of here, that he would have done it a long time ago, you would think.
Yeah, like 6 months in. Thunderbolt on the road.
So on page three, panel one, when the two Johnnies meet, the evil Johnny says to Johnny, he says, "Say, pal," he goes, "I remember reading about you and your Thunderbolt." Where?
I guess that's supposed to be like in the comics. Yeah, just like Barry Allen read about Jay Garrick.
Hmm.
So this is the first time, actually, this is worth mentioning, because you kind of talked about this, Scott, is what about when there is an actual counterpart to the person on the two Earths, and they are actually aware of this being put in a comic book. If Johnny Thunder of Earth One is reading a comic book, and there's a character in there, Johnny Thunder, who happens to look just like him, wouldn't that make him just say, hey, wait a minute, what the F is going on here?
Right, yeah. And he says it like it's no big deal. Oh, yeah, I've read about you. I mean, it's very odd. It is very odd.
But now keep in mind, when he would have been reading about Johnny Thunder, he wouldn't have looked like Johnny Thunder. He would have just had the name in common, because he would have been a kid in the 40s.
They're the same age.
But they shouldn't be the same age.
But they are.
Well, so on the next page, again, page four, again, panel one, Johnny said, the evil Johnny is talking to the Thunderbolt, because he orders the Thunderbolt to go swipe the payroll of that company. And the Thunderbolt's kind of shocked about this and said, well, that's something a bad guy would do. Evil Johnny says, so I'm a bad guy. He says, a crook. See, he says, what makes you think everybody has to be a good guy? Earth One ain't always the same as Earth Two. I'm an exception. What do we think about this? Because isn't the whole evil doppelgangers thing an Earth 3 thing? I'm struggling to
but
think
he's
of
the
any...
exception.
Yeah. Are we buying this?
Oh, I got a better question.
For the sake of just moving on for a character I don't really care about, yes.
I have a better question. Why is Johnny Thunder from Earth 1 able to control the Thunderbolt from Earth 2?
Because his name is Johnny Thunder, and he looks just like Johnny Thunder from Earth 2.
But he's not. I mean, the Thunderbolt shouldn't be that stupid. It's like he knows it's not Johnny Thunder.
See, I think that's the beginning of playing very fast and loose with whatever rules apply with this whole thing with the genie to begin with. Because we're going to touch on that here in a minute, too, is like, what exactly are the rules here? How does this work exactly?
There are no rules. This Dr. Fate and the Thunderbolt are able to do whatever Gardner Fox decides to move the plot forward.
Right. And
those are the rules.
That bugs me. We've talked about that before. But yeah, that's the whole thing with these magical characters that really does irritate me. Again, the wonders of living in the modern era where you can just look things up that would have gone completely over my head as a kid reading comics like this. In that same panel, thinking to himself, the Thunderbolt says, my new master, a Simon Legree. I had no idea who Simon Legree is. I looked him up. Simon Legree is a name applied to somebody who forces others to work very hard and is often cruel to them. It comes from a character in the novel Uncle Tom's Cabin, who beats Uncle Tom so badly that he dies. Spoiler alert, I did not know that Uncle Tom died in that book. I've actually never read it, although I'd like to one day. But yeah, that's where Simon Legree comes from.
Well, now that you've ruined it, we don't have to. Thank you.
I guess.
That's two things you've ruined tonight.
He just gave us a synopsis of Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. This was another one that kind of drove me a little bit nuts here. So page seven, and stop me if there's anything in between that you've got. Page seven, last two panels, we see Batman and his very first appearance, his very first case. This is actually taken right from the case of the Chemical Syndicate in Detective Comics 27 that Dave and I have actually tackled, although the listeners haven't heard it yet. That will be coming up on our Origins show. Anyway, so this is Batman's first appearance on his very first night in costume and everything, and the Thunderbolt and some hoods just beat the shit out of him, and so he quits. We see him, you know, in a thought balloon saying that, you know, that's it, my first and last case, I'm going back to being a playboy. I'm thinking, I thought he swore an oath on the spirit of his murdered parents, yeah, who blah, blah, blah.
Not only did he swear an oath, but he trained for like his whole, from childhood until this point, just to be ready to fight crime. And yet this is all it takes to totally discourage him.
Screw it. What I find interesting is that the Thunderbolt saved the whole planet Krypton and all those people. When it came to Batman, it would have been easier to save the Waynes and not create Batman. He said, screw it, I'm just going to pound on them.
That's an excellent point. Yeah, he could have stopped Joe Chill and yeah, would have had the same. Yeah, that's a good point. Poor Batman just can't catch a break, I guess.
Well, they don't bother to explain to you how he stopped Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and the Green Arrow, and the Hulk to a man.
Yeah, that's all just in one panel, just saying basically, oh, I did it. It's all done. Just kind of wrapping it because they're not in this story anyway.
And then he gives you the I am the greatest with his arms up in the air.
So I find this very disturbing. So after he does this, you know, he prevents, as you said, the destruction of Krypton. He stops Batman from being Batman. All these things, all these heroes, he effectively retcons away the entire Justice League of America, all however many heroes this is, 6, 8, 10, however many it is. And then on that page 8's a weird page. It's one of those half of pages because the bottom half of the page is all advertisement. So those two bottom panels there, you've got evil Johnny Thunder basically congratulating, okay, I've wiped out the Justice League. This is now Earth A. And from this point on, at least from a cursory glance, it doesn't look like this Earth's a hell of a lot different. So you're telling me that effectively the Justice League of America hasn't really made much of a change in the affairs of man, honestly, that the Earth's not all that different if they had never existed?
What happened to that first crisis where, you know, they saved the planet from being destroyed? Right. He should stop them from forming and then poof, everything's just gone.
Yeah. Yeah, the genie comes back after doing all this and Johnny Thunder, you know, evil Johnny Thunder is sitting on a chunk of rubble in space from where Earth was or something because the Justice League wasn't there to save it, so now it's destroyed, you know, or something like that.
It's like Vandal Savage in that Justice League cartoon where Superman gets thrown into the future and the whole Earth is destroyed.
Yeah, something like, yeah, something. It should be different, and it's really not. It's like everything just goes on like normal. So, you know, I'm kind of glad in a way that, you know, as we see how this story resolves, that the Justice League's not really aware of this, because what would that do to your, especially like Batman, what would that do to you psychologically, knowing that nothing you've done in your life, all these things that you've done and the accomplishments and the sacrifice and everything else ultimately comes out to a zero sum, because it's honestly not made all that hell of a lot of difference between Earth 1 and Earth A anyway.
So this is telling us that if George Bailey didn't exist, all these people are affected. But if the JLA didn't exist, whatever.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know what was a great spoof on that? When I was a kid, I used to watch the show Dallas with my grandmother. In the very last episode, it's like a spoof of It's a Wonderful Life. And it's saying if J.R. Ewing never existed, everybody's life is wonderful. Since his life didn't exist, that's the only way this could be better. If Earth was like a utopia without the Justice League.
I love this. This was one of my, this is probably my favorite catch of the entire issue. Page 10, the fourth panel, they're making their plans and everything, and you've got the Atom says, did I hear right? No superheroes, no Atom, no Green Lantern, no Justice League. And Hawkman says, fellow members, and they decide that that they're going to go and they're going to stop Johnny Thunder and the Thunderbolt and all that. And the Green Lantern says, the real Johnny Thunder can wait. He's in no imminent danger. I'm suspecting that Green Lantern doesn't really give a shit what happens to Johnny Thunder, because how could he possibly know that he's not in any danger? How does he figure that he's not in imminent danger? What if evil Johnny decides that the best thing to do with good Johnny is to kill him so that he can't ever regain control of the Thunderbolt? So I don't really buy this with Green Lantern saying he's not in imminent danger. I would think he's in very real danger, but
what anyway. He meant to say is his loss would be of no consequence.
Right. Exactly. There's a whole lot of issue left, but really my only other note on this, and I'm very curious what you guys think about this. Did everybody just forget that there's already an evil Justice League just begging for another shot at glory, why not have Evil Johnny order the Thunderbolt to free the crime syndicate and utilize them instead of this idiotic, nonsensical plan to have his goons take the place of the JLA in history, which doesn't really make any sense anyway. It's another wasted opportunity to use the crime syndicate. And I'm kind of stunned by that. When I got to that point in the story where I'm like, wait a minute, this is setting up another Evil Justice League versus the Justice League story, or in this case, the Justice Society, that's when it really occurred to me. It's like, wait, they've already got an Evil Justice League that they squandered in the last team up. So I don't know. What did you think of that?
I think they just looked at the crime syndicate as a toss away concept, and I think it was a mistake. But I think we covered that when we went over that issue and then went over their revival in Secret Society of Supervillains. My thought process with this whole thing, and I think you kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, is when they initiated these crossovers, they didn't realize the magnitude of what they could do with it and what they should do with it. And honestly, I think they're just starting to realize that about this point. And I do think that, you know, now's the point where they're saying, okay, we're going to do this regularly and we're going to make this an event. You know, I do think that's their thought process, but I think they eased into it instead of really, you know, you got to remember at this era of comics, even a two-part story wasn't the most common thing. So just the fact that they made this a two-part story, I'm sure in their minds made it somewhat epic. Again, I think they had just thought the other one was a toss-away story, and I think they wanted to have this Evil Justice League. I do get a kick, honestly, out of this particular Justice League. The Batman, you know, the unshaven Batman, the blonde-haired Superman, the Flash with the little Simon Legree mustache. You know, I do get a kick out of that. And I had to keep saying to myself, okay, I can even accept the Green Lantern of this group, you know, that somehow the Thunderbolt got the ring for him. Because you could give a regular person a ring and make him into a Green Lantern. The biggest issue I have is Superman and John Johns, whose powers were, you know, they're genetic. They have nothing to do with any kind of accident or anything, or any kind of event that gave them their powers. So I do have a problem with it, but it really, in order to have the enjoyment out of this issue that I think we all three did, you just kind of have to sweep that under the rug and keep moving. So, I mean, that's a very, very long-winded way of saying I don't think they realized that the crime syndicate had a lot of potential.
For me, the look to Green Lantern is very reminiscent of Power Ring.
Yeah.
With those widow's peaks.
Yeah.
And Batman reminds me of what they would use Thomas Wayne for post Flashpoint.
Right, right. Yeah. The thing with Green Lantern bothered me only in the aspect, and maybe I'm backwards projecting, maybe this wasn't a thing at this point in Green Lantern history, but I thought that the ring, it wasn't just a simple matter of, like, as you say, where anybody could pick it up and use it. I thought it was almost akin to like Mjolnir, where you had to be deemed worthy by the ring, or by, like, Abin Sur had to basically okay this person to take his ring. Am I wrong in that, or is that something that came later, or am I just misremembering?
Well, I don't, you know what, to rip off, I understood it to be whoever got the ring had the power. And they do that. I mean, I don't know if it's accurate. In the old Super Friends, where they do away with the superheroes that way. And Lex Luthor tells Hal Jordan, get out of the training thing. And he jumps in and he gets the ring. Huh. So I don't know if the concept works for the comics, but...
Right. Well, as I say, I may either be misremembering or it's something that would come along later. But I thought that there was a certain degree of you had to get signed off on it, you know, type of thing, as opposed to just you couldn't just pick it up, you know, and utilize it.
Well, but I guess if we're thinking
wrong about that,
if we're thinking in terms of that the Thunderbolt can superimpose you onto that other person, that would.
I thought of that, and that's kind of my headcanon for this, except, and to me this is a big but, Dottie, is that we saw multiple examples up till now, and I didn't really touch on any of them in my synopsis for time, but we saw multiple examples prior, previously in this issue up to that point where Johnny, evil Johnny, would give the Thunderbolt a task, and the Thunderbolt would almost purposely F it up because of the loophole of you have to be very specific of what you tell me to do, because I'm only going to do what you tell me. I'm not going to embellish. Like, for example, he says something about giving the heroes the boot, so he literally turns into a boot and kicks him in the ass.
Right.
So I don't see the Thunderbolt, especially when he doesn't really want to be doing what he's being ordered to do, I don't see the Thunderbolt elaborating. And so when Johnny says, I want my guys to take the place of these guys in history, I don't see the Thunderbolt saying anything more than, okay, I will put Joe, whatever the hell his name is, on Krypton or in the rocket, and going any further above and beyond. I don't see him like genetically manipulating that guy to then be a Kryptonian, or the other guy to turn into a friggin' Martian. I just don't see the Thunderbolt doing anything more than literally what he's been ordered to do. So those characters just don't work for me in that.
I understand your problem now. Your problem is you're looking for it to make sense.
Right, exactly.
That's the problem.
Yes, that is the problem. Yes. I like my fiction to make it some semblance of sense, and it really doesn't.
But yeah, no, you're right. Not only is there the genetic issue, but there is the Thunderbolt issue, because he clearly doesn't want to listen to this Johnny Thunder's commands. He's constantly in his own mind thinking about, oh, I have to do this because I'm forced to. So the Johnny Thunder should have been very, very specific in his demands. Now, realistically, based upon the fact that the Thunderbolt has power to do whatever he chooses to do, instead of having to say, take these people and bring them back to this pivotal moment in time to turn them into these superheroes, couldn't he just say, I want you to imbue them with this power?
Yes, which is almost what I think actually does happen, because there, and I don't want to spoil ahead because we haven't covered the next issue yet, but once we get to the next issue, I'm going to point out another big problem with all this that just compounds what was already bugging me with this. But we'll get back to that, because that was my big takeaway from that issue. So,
granted, it wouldn't apply to all of the heroes, but at least like, say, Barry Allen and Ray Palmer, if you're dropping these people into their position, don't they all know who they are now?
That's exactly where I was going with this. So there is a spot in the next story where several of these bad guys are now reacting as if they just got the powers, but they didn't. They were placed back in time to the origin point of these characters to gain their identities and their powers, if they had powers. So they should be well used to all this, because essentially they've grown up as these characters, but right, that's not how it's portrayed.
No, I thought that same thing, and the way, at least in my mind, it falls into place is the Thunderbolt put them in position to get the powers at the pivotal moment, and then brought them immediately forward in time to the point where they were fighting against the JSA. They did not have any chance to get experience using their powers.
That I agree with you, but that's really stupid. And yes, if that is the case, then I think your idea of just simply wishing for the Thunderbolt to imbue them with the powers of the Justice League makes so much more. It solves all these problems. That's really how it should be.
But it isn't.
Ratings on this one, I'll go first. The cover. I'm not as down on it as Paul is, but that doesn't mean I like it either. My biggest issue with it actually is the Thunderbolt. Not only don't I like this character, man, he's super creepy on this cover. He's like icky creepy on this cover. I really don't like the weird look of him on this. The figure work of the other figures I actually think looks pretty cool. That said, yeah, I got to agree, it's not the most dynamic cover either. And the Atom, you just got to look at him and go, what are you doing? How do you think that's effective in any way whatsoever? Other than maybe making the genie be like, oh, my funny bone. You know, it's really silly. So, yeah, not a great cover. The only thing I really like about it is I do like Anderson's inks. What are you laughing about?
The Atom. We're thinking about the Atom there.
Adam's treating it like it's the cover of Glamour magazine. if you get the Seinfeld reference.
Just whack that genie, Adam.
There you go. So yeah, cover. I'm gonna go a C- on the cover. Because, yeah, it just doesn't do much for me. Actually, my reaction to it when I first saw it was just, ugh. Because, you know, right off the bat, you know it's going to be a Johnny Thunder story. And I'm like, oh, God, Johnny Thunder. So, yeah, it didn't do much for me. Interior art, as I said before, this is not by any stretch that has changed my opinion much of Mike Sekowski or anything. I'm still not a fan or anything. I don't think it's great. I don't even think it's particularly good, but I do think it is quite improved from what we saw, especially like last time around with JLA 29 and 30. But yes, it still has issues and everything. I do like some of it, though. The fight scenes I thought were really good with the different facets of the Thunderbolt battling the Justice League on the ship. I thought was actually pretty cool. Actually, it's the JSA disguised as the Justice League, but you know what I mean. Yeah, not great, but improved. So I will say a straight up C on the interior art, because I think I was pretty low on the art in the prior issues that we looked at. I still, as I said, I still don't think it's great, but it's better than it was. So yeah, straight middle of the road. It's okay. And then story, for all the things we pointed out with it, yeah, it's dopey. Yeah, it doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. But at the end of the day, did I have fun? Yes, I had a blast with this. And I really like this mix of characters, Johnny Thunder aside, of course. But I love the Justice Society. And this is a good mix of characters with the Justice Society. I love the inclusion of Mr. Terrific. Nice to see Hawkman in the mix. So yeah, I really did get a kick out of this. I thought it was a lot of fun. So on that level, I'll give the story a B. It was okay. For overall grade on this one, I will say a B-. There you go.
You want me to go next?
Sure, go ahead.
Sure.
Before I tear you apart.
Oh my God. Yeah, the cover is for me the weakest point of the book. I feel it's a Colorform-esque cover, where with the exception of the Flash, you could peel off any one of these characters and stick them wherever you want. It's got no background. But I don't think it's completely horrible. It is apparently a super spectacular that's sure to become a classic. So who am I to criticize? I'm going to give it an overall grade of a C- as well. The interior art, I think, is better. I feel it's a product of the time. I feel it's a little bit of a step up. I thought it was all right, particularly, I missed this before. On page 18 of the cruise ship, is that Julius Schwartz in the panel, the top right-hand panel? To me, that's Julius Schwartz and Jack Kirby for some reason.
I don't know about Kirby, but it does look like Julius Schwartz.
So, I mean,
you're right. That's a good catch. That does look like. And, you know, the other guy does look familiar. I wonder if that's somebody else at DC.
Maybe that's Sikowski.
It could be Sikowski. It could be, I wonder if E. Nelson.
Could be Gardner Fox.
Enough. Yeah. I don't know. Somebody like that, though.
Yeah. So I gave the interior a solid B. I thought it was okay. The story I love. You know, I came into this, hate Johnny Thunder. And I thought I was going to plod through this. Just can't wait for this to be finished. I flew through. I had a blast. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'm giving it an A- for an overall grade of a B. Solid B.
I really, if I didn't say it strongly enough before, I really dislike the cover. I think this is just a bad concept, the way it's put together. I think it almost looks like a cheap fanzine cover to me. I'm going to say it's not like so bad that I'm offended by it, but it's bad. So I'm just going to say a D on the cover. The interior art, although, you know what, let me just kind of add to the fact that I don't think any of the individual figures are drawn badly. It's just the whole thing when put together is bad. The interior art, like I said, I feel like it looks too cartoony to me. The figures, when they're in motion, generally don't look like they're in motion to me. They look very static. So I'm just not crazy about it. But it's not horrible. You could follow the story pretty well. There's no panels where I say I don't understand what's going on. So I don't want to be too harsh on it. So I'm going to say just a C on the art. It's okay. I think it could be a lot better, but it's okay. The story is dumb, but it's fun. And I really enjoyed reading it. So I'm going to say a B on the story. And overcoming whatever other weaknesses it has, I really enjoyed it, so I'm going to say a B overall. Now, moving on to Justice League of America number 38, which bears a cover date of September of 1965, has a cover by Mike Sikowski and Murphy Anderson, and it tells us that never in comic book history has there been a fight to equal the colossal battle waged between superheroes and astonishing supervillains, as in Crisis on Earth A. The cover roll call is, from the Justice Society of Earth 2, the Atom, Dr. Fate, Flash, Green Lantern, Hawkman, and Mr. Terrific. And it also has the roll call for the Lawless League of Earth A, the Atom, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, John Johns, and Superman. The cover image shows Dr. Fate walloping what appears to be Superman, but additional text warns us, don't believe what you see. Nothing in this story is what it seems to be. Every page will surprise and thrill you. Hyperbole? I guess we'll need to see for ourselves. The story is written by Gardner Fox, penciled by Mike Sikowski, inked by Bernie Sachs, lettered by Joe Letteris. I don't know how to pronounce that, so we'll just go with that. And edited by Julie Schwartz. We open in the living room of the evil Johnny Thunder, who's whining like a spoiled brat that he wants to watch the ongoing battles in living color on his TV, as we go through the one-on-one battles where the experienced Justice Society is using their far more significant experience in battle to defeat the faux JLA members. Once they've captured the Lawless League, Dr. Fate magically requires the members to recount how they came to have their powers. After this setback, Johnny Thunder has the Thunderbolt whip up a super hurricane to try to take out the JSA, but Dr. Fate creates a magical gondola, as if they're in the canals of Venice, and the Green Lantern anchors them. But Johnny Thunder orders the Thunderbolt to create an earthquake, which disrupts the gondola, and even Green Lantern is struck by his nemesis, a flying tree. And Mr. Terrific laments that none of his 1,000 talents can cope with the forces of nature. Yeah, I know, but stick with us. Anyway, our heroes use their powers and teamwork to extricate themselves, and Johnny is having a hissy fit worthy of his Earth 2 counterpart. He decides to have the Thunderbolts take him to the moon to avoid the heroes, and even remembers to have him provide a spacesuit to let him breathe. But then he realizes he can't speak to give the Thunderbolt orders, and writes in the dirt on the surface of the moon to put air onto the moon. Meanwhile, the JSA are meeting and come to the conclusion that they need the Thunderbolt in order to restore the JLA. The Flash tells them that he came across a funnel of air whirling away from the Earth, and the heroes quickly track that event to the moon. While they travel to the moon, Johnny decides that he needs to create his own band of super beings and has the Thunderbolt create three of them for him. First, there's Medusa Man, who will cause you to be turned to wood if you look at his face. All right. Then we have Absorbo Man, who can absorb any superpowers used against him. And Repello Man, who can repel any force hurled against him and direct it back at the sender. Let's face it, Johnny Thunder is not a deep thinker. When the heroes arrive, the Atom and Mr. Terrific are quickly transformed into wood, and Dr. Fate quickly covers Medusa Man's face to prevent it happening from anybody else, or to anybody else, rather. But the Flash and Hawkman experience their own issues with Repello Man, and Green Lantern has similar issues with Absorbo Man. Johnny Thunder starts celebrating like a maroon, but Dr. Fate takes the now wooden figures of Mr. Terrific and the Atom and hurl them at Absorbo Man, since wood is the Green Lantern's weakness, and Absorbo Man absorbed Green Lantern's powers. Well, you do the math. With that accomplished, Dr. Fate focuses on Repello Man by flinging bolts of reverse magic at him, which do the opposite of what they should and are attracted to him, causing him to explode. Uh-huh. At the end of his rope, Johnny Thunder orders the Thunderbolts to fight Dr. Fate until he wins. But as they battle, Johnny Thunder is tossed about due to all the energies that are being thrown about, finally wishing that everything was the way it was before he ever saw the Thunderbolt, which actually returns all and erases any memories of the events except from the Thunderbolt and the readers. Wink, wink. Yeah. So, again, never read this until I read it for today's show. Silly, yes. Quick resolutions that are just kind of like a little too pat, yes. So many things that you could just nitpick, but the bottom line is I still had fun reading this. And that's why, because I had so much fun reading these two issues, to me, it's why I feel like they're finally getting the significance of these team-ups, even though there really is no team-up in this issue. But it also makes me think that they're getting the significance of the JSA now, that they believe the readers will have enough of a connection to this team that eventually leads to them becoming truly revived and, you know, carrying their own series and all of that. So to me, I'm giving this a big thumbs up, even though it's silly.
Yeah, you raise an interesting point that, you know, DC, at least for this two issues, had enough faith in the JSA to basically hand the book over. And that's interesting from the aspect of, with the exception, I feel, of the Flash, these characters really didn't get a proper reintroduction the way that I think we would think of it in more modern times, of bringing the character back, really spotlighting them, explaining exactly who they are, what their powers are. They just kind of showed up. And we've seen them around, and some of them may be a little bit self-explanatory, like Green Lantern. You know, you got the name, Green Lantern. Hawkman, I think, has already been appearing in... Yeah, he has, because he was one of the characters that that the Thunderbolt retconned away of the Justice League. So they've had a Hawkman over there. But some of the other characters, not, you know, especially like Dr. Fate, not so much. So that's interesting to me that they would hand them over with potentially, you know, modern audiences at this time, you know, little kids especially, not necessarily knowing who the characters are, not having really made a connection with them quite yet, potentially. So that's interesting.
Well, I think some of these lesser-known characters, these were test balloons. Let's right. see what the reaction is to Dr. Fate. Let's see what the reaction is to Mr. Terrific. Maybe something catches on. We throw it into Showcase for a couple of issues and see what happens.
Speaking of Showcase, it's interesting that Our Man is not a part of this, as he and Dr. Fate were just together in Showcase in those stories that we looked at. That's odd that he's not in there, yet we're bringing in more new guys, you know, with Hawkman and Mr. Terrific.
At this point, do they have any type of magical character on Earth One? Because I'm just thinking that this would create more of an intrigue to Dr. Fate than almost any other character on the JSA, because he doesn't really have an alternate type character that's similar to him. You know, right. even Mr. Terrific, who, you know, there is no Earth One Mr. Terrific, but his powers are, you know, gymnastic and strength and all of this stuff that, you know, they're very generic, even right. though he's the man of a thousand talents. You know, Dr. Fate is much more unique in his own way, I think. And that's why I feel like he merits some being showcased, if right. you accept the pun.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And he's got a yeah. fantastic design, too.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
very dynamic. It sticks out.
Yeah, I've always liked his look. He's got a very cool look.
I like the way they kind of shadow his helmet. Because, you know, I mean, it makes it look to me like it's a little old and not shiny, but still metallic.
Right.
So I don't know. That creates kind of a mystique to me. If it was just a shiny metal, it would be, to me, it would have less mystique.
You know, it almost has the vibe of a backdoor pilot.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. where you don't have the main stars of the book in it. A successful version of Coy and Vance, so to speak.
If that was the thinking, I mean, it'll be a while before we go in that direction, because this is 65 and All-Star didn't revive with these characters until what? When was that? 70 something? 70.
I think it was around 76, maybe.
Oh, maybe that. Yeah. I'd have to look that up.
I'm not sure. I'll look that up right now.
So that's pretty much 11 years before that would happen.
Something like that. Yeah.
All-Star Comics number 58 had a cover date of December 75.
75. So, yeah, 10 years. That's crazy.
Because, I mean, if you buy a Superman book or you buy a Justice League book, you're anticipating they're going to be in the book. And if they're not, you're not going to be happy about it.
Right. Especially the way the cover is presented, because they kind of hide the fact that that's not really Superman.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I remember, like, just glancing at this before I read these and thinking, so Dr. Fate is punching Superman and Superman's reeling back from that? That I know Superman has the weakness to magic, but that's not him casting a spell. That's him throwing a punch. You know, that seemed surprising to me, just as drawn on the cover. Although, I have to admit, in contrast to the last issue, I really like this cover.
Yeah, I do too. Part of the reason I really like this one is that it's reminiscent, of course, this came way before, but it's reminiscent to me of those later, like, George Perez covers of other crises that we would see, you know, Crisis on Earth Prime and that sort of thing. It's kind of the predecessor of that, and I like that. I like that a lot. And the inset picture of, you know, of Dr. Fate belting alternate Superman is cool.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a lot of notes on this issue. Most of what I have, I just kind of incorporated into my synopsis. That is the problem with pre-writing a synopsis, is I do usually find that any comments I have, I've already made.
What did I say I was going to look up before? Okay. Oh, yes, about Mr. Terrific. So we were wrong. He is going to appear again between now and when we were talking about that story that I was talking about. That happens way on down the line. That's Justice League of America 171 in 1979. So between now and then, he's not in a lot of stories, but he is in several more team up, you know, the Justice League team ups between now and then. So, yeah, I just didn't remember him having been in those. Actually, some of the ones that he's in, I don't think I've ever read. So, yeah, there's that. I'm with you. I don't have a whole lot of notes on this either. My other big note beyond what we talked about with the villains and their origin spots and all that sort of thing is that page 14. I'm very curious what you guys think about this, because this makes me nuts. So page 14, panel one, you've got the part where dumbass Johnny Thunder has forgot that he can't breathe on the friggin' moon. So he gets on his hands and knees and he writes in the moon dusk. He writes, "Say you," which is right. The magical word. But he writes, say, S-A-Y, you, Y-O-U. Mm-hmm. So he's basically spelling it out phonetically. Now, even if I were to buy that Johnny Thunder could write his commands to the Thunderbolt, which I don't, by the way, but even if I did, the fact that he didn't spell it how it's supposed to be, which I think is C-E-I-U yes. or something like that. He didn't spell it correctly, would seem to me that that would sour the whole notion of being able to order him through writing, right?
Yes.
So I don't buy this. Do you buy it?
No, and I'll give you one better. The wrap-up at the whole end of the whole story, when he says, "I wish this never happened," or whatever he says, he goes, "Make it happen. Says me." That shouldn't have done anything.
Yeah.
But the Thunderbolt wants to follow that particular instruction, so maybe that makes it okay.
That was really my only major criticism of this, was I hate Perdegaton endings. That's what I call these kind of endings where...
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yep, you have an entire story where at the end of it, it either never happened or nobody remembers it, or sometimes both. I call that a Perdegaton ending, and I hate those. And that's exactly what this is. And it's like,
But, you know, this was so goofy and such a wacky concept to begin with that I didn't mind it on this one, because I wasn't taking it seriously.
Right.
There's something about Perdegaton where he's like a serious threat that then they go, never happened.
The thing about that I don't know, it just feels inconsistent to me, is... if him saying what he did made them all just forget that it happened, why is it in last issue that they remembered the JLA if he made them not happen?
I know.
Well, maybe it's like the whole mirror universe. If you're in the transporter, it doesn't affect you. If you're on Earth 2, when it happens, it doesn't affect your memory.
Well, I haven't done it. Yes.
I have a question, if I may. I did not realize that Green Lantern had the ability to change the color of his flame. I thought it was a green flame, and that's it. I didn't think he could make it yellow.
I thought about that, too. I wondered about that, if that was an ability just for this story, or if that was a thing. Because, yeah, I thought the same thing with that.
And also the making of the missiles. I thought that was rather like a John Stewart type thing that would come later,
right?
And so I found that kind of a neat thing. I got a kick out of the fight scenes. I thought they were fun. I liked how the Earth Tours were able to use their knowledge of the Earth One team to their advantage. So right. See Adam knowing about the controls in his gloves, the vulnerability to yellow, all that kind of stuff was kind of cool, I thought. And the JSA teamwork of being able to work together in that goofball scene where, you know, all right, you flap your wings, I'm going to run my feet, and we're all going to do an acrobatic number. Now, if they were on water skis, That would have been fantastic. What did you pay to see the JSA on water ski? Oh, wait a minute. See, I tend to think the Thunderbolt left that trail of air to the moon on purpose, so they could find him. The Medusa Man. Didn't we learn recently, Scott, that Medusa was just a mistranslation? That it meant, you know, an ability not able to control your emotions? For some reason, I feel we just covered this somewhere.
Exactly.
And I did like on page two, you know, I want to see what's going on, and it's a black and white set. And he goes, oh, no, I want a color set.
The art in this issue is kind of an extension from what we got in the last one. Feels very similar to me. Although, I have to say, I'm not too wild about the character models for these. What is Medusa Man, Absorbo Man, and Repello Man? They're just very unimaginative as far as I'm concerned. So,
you know what that they remind me of? Do you remember when they had the backup feature, Dial H for Hero?
Yeah.
Okay, come up with your own hero and mail it in, and we'll, if we like it, we'll use it.
See, one of my thoughts, as I was reading this and synopsizing it, I was thinking, boy, Gardner Fox really didn't put any real effort into creating, you know, true, you know, bad guys that he could use in the future. And I was blaming him for that. And then I thought to myself, but you know what? Evil Johnny Thunder isn't supposed to be all that bright. Okay. So maybe this is the level of imagination that that character has as opposed to Gardner Fox.
Right.
That's how I was taking it, that it's Dopey Johnny Thunder from Earth One, who is still head and shoulders above Earth Two Johnny Thunder.
He's you know, he's craftier. He's you know, he's a bad guy, so you know, he's more conniving and that sort of thing, but I don't think he's necessarily any smarter than the other one. The other one's dumb in an innocent way, you know, whereas this one's dumb.
This one's dumb in an evil way.
Right.
If I were going to cast a voice for him, I would make it Harvey Korman.
But wouldn't you be better off making Harvey Korman the lightning bolt, the thunderbolt? Because
it's
similar to the Great Gazoo.
I forgot that he was the Great Gazoo. In fact, God.
He could do it exactly the same way. He could give an order. All right, dum-dum.
God, I forgot he was that. Man, Harvey Korman was around forever, wasn't he?
And we were lucky to have him. He was one of America's treasures.
He was great.
Just watch Blazing Saddles. And you
That's
know.
What I was thinking.
Or History of the World Part 1. I get a big kick out of seeing how he and Tim Conway used to go out of their way to try to make the other one laugh during the skits on the Carol Burnett show. Like, you know, they didn't take staying in character serious to the extent that if they could make the other guy come out of character, they were thrilled. They wanted to stay in themselves, but they wanted to see if they could screw over the other guy. And I mean, it was as friendly a competition as you'd ever get, but I just thought it was so much fun to watch because none of the bits were so serious that mattered if they came out of character anyway.
I think Tim Conway had the ability to crack up Harvey Korman a lot better.
Well, yeah, they say he had the ability to crack up everybody, that he really was like one of these people. When you saw him in person, he was just hilarious. But it shows you how much we have to talk about this issue.
Speaking of hilarious, next to last panel of the book where the returned Justice League's all gathered around the meeting table and Superman's reading that note. Look at Hawkman. He's drawn super scrawny, but also they forgot the wing part of his Hawk helmet. So he looks like a teenager that just got a haircut. Do you see him?
Yeah.
He looks ridiculous.
How come Green Arrow has a red hat? Did I miss something?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, you got a new hat just for the occasion. Awesome. And it's everybody, too. Even Wonder Woman's there. Wonder Woman, Aquaman, yeah, everybody's there. Stupid snapper cars there. Adam has his little floaty chill.
Yeah, I guess that's...
Whatever that is. It's either floating or it's tacked up to the wall, one of the two, but he has that little chair again, too.
Somebody picked it up, jammed it into the wall, and walked
away. Here, sit over there.
Why would Johnny Thunder even come to the attention of the Justice League? I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. A small-time crook. Okay, well, let the cops handle it, then.
It'll be reminiscent of the old Batman show. Oh, the bank's been robbed. Oh, this looks like a job for Batman.
I think that they show you the level of seriousness that they take this issue or these two issues with by having the Thunderbolt break the fourth wall in the last panel and winking to the audience.
Right.
And I'm okay with that. I don't say that as a criticism. I like these two issues and I got a kick out of them. I don't think they really have a good character model on the Thunderbolt. I think they needed to work on that visual a little bit. But right. Other than that, I was fine with it, and I was fine with them treating Johnny Thunder. I was okay with them having him in the story because they treated him like he was a putz, and that's okay to me. You know, it's almost like if they had treated him seriously, then I would have been like, why are we wasting any ink or thought on this character? But treating him the way they did and actually letting his counterpart be the villain and all, it was all cool with me.
I think I just realized who this character model of the Thunderbolt reminds me of, and I'm looking it up real quick. No, it's not that either. Damn. I was thinking, because one of the things that really bugs me about this character model is his pointed nose. I mean, it comes to a sharp point. And I was thinking he looks like a bee more than he looks like a magic genie. And so I was thinking, am I thinking of like the bee from like the Honey Nut Cheerios or something? But I just looked that character up and he's got a round nose too. So who am I thinking of?
Wasn't there like in a Bugs Bunny cartoon or something, a bee with a nose like that?
Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, like a really old one.
Yeah, now that you say that, yeah, it's a bee or a mosquito or something like that. Yeah, now, yeah, that's kind of ringing a bell, yeah. But yeah, that's what he looks. Yeah, he looks more like Insectoid or something than he does like he's supposed to be like a living lightning bolt or something. I don't know. He just looks really freakish. Did they keep that? Did they keep the pointed nose? Because I don't remember that.
I don't have any recollection. One of the things that I was curious about was if they ever bothered to use these JLA doppelgangers again. Now, I could not muster the energy to look up every one of them, but I did look up the faux Superman, and I saw, you know, on the DC wiki page for this book, and they had the character, and I clicked on him, and it said he's got three appearances. So really? the first two are these two issues, and the third is an issue of 52 where they're recounting the multiple Earths, so it's kind of a synopsis of different Earths and different characters. So he doesn't truly appear in that issue. So this is a one and done for these. Assuming that everybody else is the same, they're all a one and done.
It looks like the nose doesn't stay.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought. I didn't think that was a permanent thing. No, that was pretty much it. Do we want to do grades on this one?
Sure. I actually really like the cover on this, and I would have zero problem picking it up. I wouldn't have had a problem picking it up then. And honestly, if I saw this at a con now at a decent price, I would have no problem picking it up now. I like the roll call on it. I like that they have the faux Justice League, or as they put here, the Lawless League, on their side. And I just like the layout of it. Everything about it actually stands out to me. So I'm gonna say an A-. It's not quite iconic, but it's very cool as far as I'm concerned. The interior art, I don't think there's a dramatic difference. I think I rated that as a C, and I'm gonna continue to rate it that way. And the story, once again, was a lot of fun. I'm going to say a B on the story. And a B, also, again, once again, same as last one, a B overall on the book. Actually, I'm going to give it a B plus because I like the cover so much more.
I like the cover as well. For me, what sells it is the roll call. Because when I jumped in buying these in like the early 80s, late 70s, that's what they used to put on the cover. So it triggered such a warm, fuzzy memory. And I got a kick out of that. I like the dynamic aspect of the cover. And I'm right there with Paul. I would give the cover an A minus. I like the interior art a little better than Paul. I think it's good. It's serviceable. It's of the time. I enjoyed it. I gave it a solid B plus. The story, it's wacky. It's weird. It's like I said, it's almost like a backdoor pilot that never went anywhere. And it has the it never happened ending that's usually very annoying. But in this, it works for some reason. So for that, I gave the story an A for an overall grade of an A minus. I can't believe I'm grading this thing. This is like one of the strongest books we've done so far.
Right? That's the weird thing.
You would have thought like the Earth 3 one. Oh my God, the Crime Syndicate. That's an A plus. No, this is the A book.
Dude, you never know what you're going to get, because I really thought with this one, I thought, oh, God, Johnny Thunder, this is going to suck. And it was fun. I really did enjoy it. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. I really dig this cover. I'm not quite as high on it as you guys, I think. I'm going to go a B-plus on it, but I still think that's pretty strong. Yeah, I really like the cover on this. I wish the inset picture was a little more detailed, but I really do like that. And, yeah, this definitely would have caught my interest as a kid had I seen it and been like, oh, yeah, this I got to check that. What's this all about? So that's really cool. Interior art, yeah, I got to say it. I do think it continues to get better. There's still some wonky anatomy and some goofy things and everything, but some of it actually looks really good. And I'm quite impressed by page 23 when evil Johnny's getting knocked all over the place by the incredible forces being unleashed in the big battle at the end. That art is actually really nice. It's colored very well. It's very dynamic. And, you know, if he could have drawn like this all the time and had this much dynamism in his action stuff all the time, this guy would have been, you know, right up there. So I was pretty impressed that this was by Sikowski, because then there's other pages. You know, you go back just a couple of pages of page 20 with whatever this guy, Absorbo Man, and those just look awful. So it's weird that it's the same guy, you know, and doing, you know, just terrible, goofy looking kitty art, and then some stuff that would be right up there with you know, some of the best art of the time. So that's really weird. But overall, in the art on this, again, I'm gonna go a straight middle of the road C. It's pretty good. It's, you know, it's on par with the issue before it. And then story wise, I mean, there's a lot of it. You just got to kind of roll with it. You got to kind of turn your brain off, especially your continuity brain, your the part of your brain that wants to make sense of all this. And if you just do that and just roll with it as a good, you know, superhero tussle type of thing, then it's a lot of fun. And I enjoyed it that way. And it was fun, you know, in that aspect. I'm going to say, I'll say a B plus on the story as well. So overall grade on this one, I'll say a B plus. I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to. Last note for these two issues, they are both reprinted in the same places the same number of times. So we've got Justice League of America Archives Volume 5, hardcover, 1999. Crisis on Multiple Earths Volume 1, trade paperback in 2002. Showcase presents Justice League of America Volume 3, trade paperback 2008. Justice League of America, the Silver Age Omnibus Volume 2, hardcover, 2016. Justice League of America, the Silver Age Volume 4, trade paperback, 2018. Crisis on Infinite Earths box set, hardcover, in 2020. And Crisis on Multiple Earths, crossing over trade paperback in 2021. So next time, let me pull out the master list here. Oh, this should be interesting. I'm looking forward to this. Next time, we are going to be looking at Brave and the Bold, number 61 and 62, which features a two-part story, a team-up between Starman and the Black Canary.
Be there or be square.
Or be a cube.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.